Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight.
Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's been a great day so far.
Pretty good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. What else is going on? Besides the fact that everybody's been frothing at the bit to talk about last night's show.
Oh, now, you know,
Wait.
Oh, okay.
Before you get too into it, we're waiting for Paul Vasquez to call. He was a character actor on Sons of Anarchy. He's also an actor, and he'll be on here shortly. But anything you want to talk about? Go for it.
Oh,
now
you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, last night's episode was off the hook. It was insane, but excellent. I don't know if I can wait until December 3rd, though. Yeah, I mean, we have to, unfortunately, but I didn't know that they weren't going to do one next week. I'm like, what the hell? What am I going to do?
They haven't done it ever.
I know.
They haven't done one the week of Thanksgiving ever.
I know, but I forgot, you know, because it's like, oh, boy, oh, you know, and it's okay. I can deal with that, you know, because I'm thinking, Thanksgiving isn't on Tuesday. What the hell? I know. But, yeah, last night's show was exactly how I thought they were going to kill him off.
How was that? Or were you rubbing a crystal ball or what?
No. I figured because of the hate that Jack had for what was done to his wife, to his father, to his mother, you know, I knew that he was going to get even to the point of everyone is going to stand there and watch what I do.
Well, no, actually, because if you remember when they all went and had that meeting, they talked about that, but it being that when they have those kind of a meeting, it's closed. So nobody got to what they were planning.
Exactly. But I knew he was going to be killed off. I didn't know how, but I knew he was going to be killed off. And the way...
If you follow... If you follow Hamlet, the part he's playing in Hamlet is Claudius, and he got killed before Act 5. Well, this is Act 6, but...
Yeah, like I said, I knew that was coming, but I didn't know it was going to be on last night's show. I thought, damn, look at that. You know, I kind of thought, like, on the last show, it would be kind of like a, you know, a takeout them, but... This was off the hook.
No, it was. Very good. Everybody got to find out
what their... I enjoyed it. I watched it twice.
Everybody got to find out what their part was.
You know, it's just a shame, though, that, you know...
Well, I don't know, but...
They might. I don't know, but that would be awesome if they did another season, for sure.
That was when the lieutenant told her the DA that, well, you got what he promised you.
Yeah, I know. You know, now I've seen the DA in a lot of shows over the years, you know, and she's always played a good part. So I knew with her coming on to the season here, she was going to, you know,
well,
be
like
at the top of her game.
I like when she went all gangster.
Yeah, that was good too.
Yeah, this is, it's like information that I'm privy to, I was told it's just going to get better as it goes.
Well, you know, the strange thing is, because they were talking about Tara, okay? And so it was like, I thought, oh, is something going to happen to her? You know, it kind of had like a weird twist to it. You know what I mean? Excuse me. It kind of made you think, is something going to happen to her? You know, and it's like, or what's going on with Tara? Because, wow, did she play the ultimate piss off of Gemma? You know what I mean? And so I wasn't sure how that was going to play out. And when they were talking about Tara, I thought, oh, God, they're going to out her right here. You know, and then all of a sudden that twist came, and it was Clay. And I'm like, oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. What about when she was getting in? She was getting in the car.
Well, you know, the thing is, when she got that phone call, you know, and how, well, you know, the whole thing was odd. When the three of them getting in the car, I thought, oh crap, what's going to happen here? You know, and so, anyways. When Gemma started crying, you know, and then when Tara reached her hand up to Gemma, I thought, oh, wow, what the hell just happened here? you know? And I thought, oh, are they going to do something to her in the car? And then when her phone rang and it was like, wow, this is something. Ooh, this is something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unbelievable, that's for sure.
Yes, it was. Just all the little things, like, you know, how can we get the pink truck?
I know. So, like I said, I don't know what, you know, the show's going to be in 2 weeks, because it puts you on the seat. And you're on the edge. You know, it's not like all the 5 seasons prior to this year, okay?
Uh-huh.
The show has always been like, okay, previously and the last show, you know, it showed a pattern of what you knew how the next season would start into. Does that
right.
make sense? But like I said before, in regards with this season, it's been so out there and in so many different directions, you cannot pin it from one show to the next. You can't sit there and say, ooh, I know what's going to happen in next week's show. Maybe a little bit, but not like what it's been the prior seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, here comes Opie. Dying out of Jax. Here comes his wife. Here comes his father. Here comes his mother. Here comes Tara. It was almost like when the gun was handed to Jax, you know, and I the classic part of that was how Clay looked over at Gemma, like, this is it. And she had no idea. What was coming? None. Well, she shouldn't have known anyways. But, you know, just the look he gave her. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is it.
Right. Well, we got our special guest. Hello, Paul. How are you today?
Hey, finally I made it through. How are you doing, Philip?
Not bad.
Well, you have a partner in crime there, or is it just you?
That's Nora. She's calling from Chicago.
That's you again?
Hi, Paul.
Nora.
Nora?
Yes.
I'm from Chicago.
Okay, hi, Nora. Nice to meet you, Philip. I came into this biker bar that's in San Jose, California, where I'm at right now visiting my family, and I had surgery on my finger, and this gal that works here is actually a former porn star. It's like, usually when you do those interviews, you got to be somewhere quiet. I said, I know, but I'll just sit in the back and have a blue moon and do my thing, man, you know, at least I'll let them know where I am, and maybe somebody will hear it. They'll come in here and give them some business or something. Who knows?
I have a pretty tight schedule. I'm working 7:10s or 7:12s, sometimes when I get off work, my time is precious.
Oh wow, I understand that. You know, work for me can be really frustrating too. You know, it could be anywhere from just a 6-hour shoot to about 16-hour days. You know, it's just this is a film I did a year ago. I got coming out called Foreign Land, which I'm really proud of. Should be coming out any day now or any month now. They called me at 3:00 in the afternoon in Palos Verdes, shoot this one scene that was very important, and they didn't take me to shoot my scene until 12 hours later. So you must know what that feels like. It's like, wow. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like when I'm waiting to get something inspected so we can move on to the next job.
Right, right. Well, I'm sitting here at Stevie's Bar in Campbell, California, which is near San Jose, and it's the Northern California area. The show they're near, but I want, you know, hopefully tonight we can discuss. There's more about me than just being on that show. So,
yeah, I'm just looking through a few things here, but you were born in 1970.
Yes, I was born in 1970. Right.
And the your nickname is Spotty?
No, my nickname is Spody.
Spody, oh.
Spody.
Okay.
That's S-P-O-D-Y. Like Sporty,
okay.
But Spody.
Okay. So, well, how did you get involved in acting?
You know, I was, when I was a kid, like around, say, about 4 years old, I was addicted to, like, the Brady Bunch. A lot of cartoons. So I would literally, like, stick my face on my knees in front of the television, watch TV all day long. And I think it was my mom's boyfriend at the time, this guy Michael Stringer, let him rest in peace. He was from Vietnam. He said, you know, you think your son needs glasses? And I was like, and my mom was like, okay, well, let's find out. And sure enough, unfortunately, I was born with fucking inexcusable. Well, I guess I can curse on here, right? Or not?
Yeah.
I can't. I was born with fucking bad eyesight, which really pissed me off because I was not told, my mom was not told I was born with such bad eyesight I needed glasses for the rest of my life. So I wore glasses from the age of 4 all the way to the age of 35, and I got LASIK done. Not a time I might need them again, but what happened was all during that time, I would watch so much movies and television that I got hooked on movies from like Charles Bronson to Clint Eastwood. J. Michael Vincent, you know, just Smokey and the Bandit, you know, Burt Reynolds, Deliverance, movies like that. But I was, that my mother and my family were so, you know, being us Mexicans, I guess, I don't want to say that just because we're Mexicans, but they would be very loose-lipped about the things that I was allowed to watch. I could watch any movie I want with rated R, it didn't matter to them.
Nice. So
as you
got older, and the movies progressed from the TV shows to the movies, what was your first acting gig?
Well, okay. Well, what happened was once I decided I wanted to be an actor, like I should have gotten to that part too to get that out of the way. It was in 79. I saw 77. I saw Car Wash. That was like one of my favorite comedy movies. I was 7 years old. In 79 came around, I saw The Warriors with James Remar. And James Remar, who plays Ajax in The Warriors, I mean, I wanted to be every warrior, and I wanted to be a baseball player. I wanted to be all those for Halloween. But James Remar stuck out the most to me, and he's like one of the greatest character actors in the world. So what I did is I kept following his career, and when he did 48 Hours, the first one with Eddie Murphy and them, and they break him out of prison, that's when I said, this is what I really want to do. And so I ended up finding out somehow, some way, I don't know how I did this. I can't really explain it, but maybe call it ingenuity or something. But I went I found out a way to find out how to get a hold of him when he did a movie called The Cotton Club in 1984. I wrote Orion Pictures or Francis Ford Coppola at Zoetrope Studios or something. And when I did that, I asked who his agent was, and they gave me his agent's name. And I wrote him like two or three times. And he finally wrote me a letter like in 1985 telling me, hey, do you want to be an actor? This is how you're going to do it. And it was like a three-page letter from New York City. And at first I thought there were copies of like a generalized letter that he would send anybody else, you know. But it wasn't like that. They were actually really answering every question that I had to ask him. He said, go study with Bell Adler. She's the greatest teacher in the world. She was Bonham Brown's teacher. She was his teacher, Pacino's teacher. She's out of New York. She'll be teaching a class in L.A. in 87. So during that time, when I took that advice, and also wrote Willem Dafoe, too. Willem Dafoe gave me some great advice, too. So I started doing theater in the local area of San Jose, California. My first starring role was a David Mamet play called The Frog Prince. And for a 15-year-old to be starring in The Frog Prince was very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was, because it's a very adult-oriented kind of a film, you know. I mean, not a film, I mean a theater, I mean a play, excuse me. David Mamet's stuff is pretty controversial. So I won some awards for that. I went to L.A. in 87 for the summer. My parents, you know, funded me. My mother, Rachel, and my stepfather, Robert, sent me out there, and I went in my little Volkswagen. And so I had 1 year, you know, one summer to kill before my senior year, and I fucking went out there and got women and went to acting class with Steph Stella Adler, and I was in class, and it was very intimidating because I was in class with all working actors. I mean, we're talking Jason Patrick had The Lost Boys out that summer, which was a big movie. Sally Chalmers had already been, you know, in MASH. Charlene Tilton had already been in Dallas. Mark Goodman had been a very well-known DJ on MTV. I was in there with Jensen Daggett, who was a model. Benicio Del Toro was in my class. Selma Hayek was in my class. So, you know, but Selma hadn't done anything yet either, but it was just very intimidating to be there because Selma Adler would just yell at us. Like, if you didn't keep a banana correctly on stage, you do yell at you and tell you straight up, like, just scream at you. So, but after I studied with her, I got an agent while I was in L.A. for the summer of 87, and this guy named Bill Kerwin, and he sent me on. I got my first gig, I think, was Private Eye or Simon & Simon or something like that. And then I did a Porsche commercial, which was a bio commercial, or some photographer, someone to pay me a large amount of money. So I was doing my thing, and I felt like it was a transformation for me because no women gave me the time of day back at home. But in L.A., all of a sudden, I'm getting hit on by women that are, like, you know, 10 years older than me, and I'm only, like, 17 years old. I'm older than them. I'm, like, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, just having a good time, man.
There you go. And so you met some people during your stay in L.A., one very interesting person you met was Rick James, I understand.
Well, yeah, well, see, what happened was after I studied with Stella, I left. I had to go back home now. I had to go back to San Jose to finish my senior year of high school. And during that time, after I was done there, I went back to L.A. 2 weeks after graduation. Packed up the Volkswagen again, went back and did my thing. Went back to Stella Adler, but I wasn't happy anymore because she wasn't teaching, so I went to study with Janet Elhanty, who was very, very well. Everyone in her class, if you're not working, you're not in her class. It's kind of the way she does it, you know, unless she really believes that you believe in what you want to do. But during that time, I was auditioning. I was booking some more gigs, some more films, like Pump Up the Volume and Brady's Nightmares TV series and stuff. But, yeah, I ran into Rick James, which is a very interesting topic, because I just spoke to David Addison today. David Addison was Rick's right-hand man. He was like, you know, I mean, he was his like caretaker slash his best friend slash carried his money, did whatever he needed. He, you know, so he's got to clean him up, take care of him. Because Rick was a very, actually, you know, believe it or not, he was a really good man. He really was. He had his faults, and I'm not one to judge people for their faults. I really do not judge at all, because I've been judged so many times that I don't look at people as bad people for having their downfalls, whatever their vice is. But Rick was, I met him at the Roxbury, which was like this popular nightclub back on Sunset Strip back in like 1990, 91. I think I met him in January 91 because he was hitting on my girlfriend in the VIP lounge. And right. I didn't even know it was him. And I was like, what the fuck are you? Like, who, I mean, who, do I know you or something? I mean, why are you hitting on my lady? Because I'm Rick James, man. I mean, what? Do I know you, man? I'm like, oh, Rick James? Like, super freak Rick James? The way he talked. And I was like, wow, well, I guess for sure. I'll buy you guys a drink. And man, he was having a drink. And then it was kind of fun because, you know, because Dave Addison was dressed like a cowboy, you know, with boots and jeans and stuff. And you got Rick wearing his, you know, he's got his long cherry curls and bolero hats and stuff. And he had all these women around him. And he just, for some reason, he took a liking to us. So I don't know what it was about me. I'll never know till this day, but he liked me. He liked my girlfriend at the time, and he invited us out to his hotel. He was staying at the Mamasan Hotel. I'll never forget that. And the Mamasan Hotel, we went there, we drank, and he called us back the next day and said, come on over and have lunch. We have lunch with him. And he goes, I'm checking out to go rent this place in Hollywood Hills. I'll never forget this. It was the bill for his hotel for 1 month was like $14,000.
Wow.
So when you're 21 years old and it's 1991, to me, that's a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For him, that's probably like nothing. You know, it wasn't. So, yeah, I did meet him along the way. And I went up to see the guest house. It was like a house that was built by Mickey Rooney, actually. And our address up there back then, as I told about Behind the Music in VH1, was 8115 Mulholland Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there. I saw it. I said, man, I love this guest house, right? Man, I wish I could live here. He said, well, then just move in then. I said, yeah, right, dude. I'd have to break my lease. He goes, so what? I'll take care of that. Are you serious? So my girlfriend's like, yeah, move in here, move in here. So I ended up moving out of my place within 48 hours to go live there.
Wow.
I didn't pay any rent, none of that. And what it was is that he wanted to see me succeed as an actor. That's what he wanted to see. He wanted to see me make it well. And Dave, his assistant, was such a great, normal guy, like normal meaning like he was straight, he didn't drink, he didn't do drugs, and Rick was so adamant about never letting anyone, especially myself, see him do drugs at all, period. So his cocaine habit was probably about, honestly, this sounds like crazy, but it was like $1,200 a day.
Wow.
It was like a lot, you know. And then, you know, the rent was 10 grand. We didn't own anything in the house. You know, we went to Good Guys. There was a 24-hour Good Guys back then, and it was kind of crazy where he bought like $7,000 worth of stereo equipment just so he could play his own music in the house and watch movies like Caligula, that he really liked that movie, Caligula. So,
yeah.
So Rick was a little strange at times, you know. But everybody came to that house. I mean, you name it, they were there. Heavy D, Quincy Jones, Madonna, Bobby Brown was a regular. You know, he was my drinking buddy, you know. Sly Stone, Tina Marie was always there all the time, you know, and MC Hammer came there and told him, you know, hey, you know, will you go to the Grammys with me? Because Hammer was about to be sued by Rick back then for taking the song You Can't Touch This and not paying him for any of that. So he gave Rick a writer's credit, and then when he did that, Rick won, you know, they won Best Song of the Year. He got, you know, he got as a writer, he got, you know, he won the Grammy Award also and made millions. That man had so much money, but he did so much drugs. I just don't understand it. I don't understand why he would want to do that to himself. I never could have gotten there. I never could get it. But when he was sober, he loved to go out and eat really good food.
Hmm.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Nora. You got some questions for Paul?
Oh, sure. Give me one second here. I'm sorry. I just had to get my thing right here in front of me. I apologize. So, now, when were you in a first acting debut, and how old were you?
My first acting debut, as far as what, theater or television or film?
all of those, if you don't mind.
I think the first thing I ever did was, I think, the 10 Little Indians when I was, like, 5, 6 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In elementary school. And then I did a bunch of other little plays in between there. And like I said, then I went into the David Mamet Frog Prince play. I even did the Nutcracker out of all things. Can you believe that? Paul Vasquez doing the Nutcracker. That's kind of fucking crazy. No ballet stuff. I did that. But then after that, my first television gig was, I believe it was Private Eye or Simon & Simon. I don't remember which one came first. That was,
okay.
That was like 17. It was like 87 or something like that back then. They were you know, Pool Player number one or whatever my character name was, you know, a couple lines here and there, just to get in the Screen Actors Guild and get things going.
Gotcha. And now, do you have, a good family support for what you chose to do with your life in regards to acting or plays or, you know, whatever the whatever this has brought you into?
Well, I mean, I honestly, everybody in my family knew that I was like Mr. Movie Buff. Everybody. I mean, if you called up, with my family, both sides of my family used to call me Paul John. My middle name is John, so. If they all, God, if you want to go to the movie, just ask Paul John. He'll tell you what time, you know, Jaws is playing. He'll tell you what theater it's at, I mean, or what time it's going to be on TV tonight or what channel. I mean, I was the movie, everything, and TV, everything.
Okay.
But my mother, who raised me, and I'm very proud of her, she's a self-made, you know, millionaire on her own as a chef. You know, she's a great woman.
She's a chef, right?
Yeah, she's a fine dining chef. She's extremely good at what she does and never went to the culinary, straight Mexican Chicana gal who just learned how to cook beans and rice and then turned in and learned how to cook, you know, Chilean sea bass and pan-seared ahi tuna and all that good stuff, you know?
Right.
So that's, she admired the fact that I was writing, because I used to write a lot of actors, like in my teen years. Like I said, I would write actors to get advice, get autographs and stuff. So I finally figured out how I can get over there. She was not happy with me going there when I graduated high school. She wanted me to go to college. And we fought really hard over that because I had a really good grade point average. I went to Saratoga High School, which was a really good high school. Matter of fact, I didn't even realize at the time that the alumni from there was Steven Spielberg graduated from there too, from Saratoga High School.
Okay.
I guess he just went there for 1 year or something. I don't know, but he's in the photos there. And I had a 3.8 grade average, and you know, then finally, you know, it took a few other people in my family to just say, you know, let him go do what he wants to do. Let him follow his dream. You know, I mean, he wants to do it. Let him do it. You know, and my father wasn't really much of a. My real dad, Paul Vasquez Sr., wasn't really much of an influence to. So it didn't really matter to him whether I went there or not. You know, all my dad did was play guitar and have women around and drink his beer. And, you know, that's why they just play his guitars. And he was good at what he did, you know. So,
okay.
But I did have family support, though. I mean, in the end, my mom did support me. It took her a while, but, you know, mothers can be with their kids. She's very protective of me because I'm an only child, so.
Yeah, I was going to ask that if you were an only child or if you had older siblings. Now, was that kind of tough being an only child and seeking
Absolutely.
Out, going into the career that you chose to go into?
Absolutely, because I grew up around a lot of, I grew up closer really when I grew up. You know, I was not really the greatest, how do you say it, the coolest kid on the block, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, I was chubby, I wore these thick glasses. So, you know, I used to get picked on a lot, you know, by girls. Other, you know, bully kids and stuff. And, you know, and some of these people are my friends on Facebook today, which is really fucking funny because it's like, that's kind of neat, you know? And so
right.
It was really, it was tough. It was tough because I had my dad's family who I would go see whenever I saw my dad, but they were much older than I am. Well, my mom's family, my uncles, my aunts and uncles, or brothers and sisters, ranged from 3 years older than me to 10 years older than me or 12 years older than me. So they became my brothers and sisters. Because my grandmother on my mom's side, pretty much helped raise me, you know, because my mom worked a lot. You know, she was 15, for Christ's sakes, you know, I mean, and what was she going to do? She had to go work, you know, and so we had to do, you know, whether it was welfare or whatever, what we did, and so it was tough, but in the end, having my aunts and uncles and my mom's family really helped a lot, because they cared about me a lot, but my dad's family, my aunts and uncles on that side, you know, they were much older, because they're already pushing, like, in the late 70s, they were more like, you know, as they say in Spanish, go ahead, mijo, if you want to go do your thing, go do it, you know, whatever. But they were always too busy partying, you know.
Right.
And my mom's family was all sports oriented. That's all they did was play baseball and football.
Now, do you enjoy sports as well, or would you rather just, tune into a movie or something?
You know what? If my best friend Frank Lopez, who I grew up with in San Jose, who's my best friend till this day, was to hear me say I like sports, he'd say he's lying. I do like sports, but I'm not a big avid fan of sports where I know, like, who's in the playoffs or who's who and who what. I'll just sit there and watch the game, but I was never really coordinated. Now, I'm not putting myself down when I say that, but I was never really, like, you know, when I went and tried out for football, I played sports. I played football. I wrestled. You know, I won a few matches here and there, do this and that, but I wasn't really good at it. That wasn't my thing. I rather wanted to do drama. You know, I'd rather be this little chubby guy doing drama, you know, and just enjoy myself. You know, do lip syncing and do whatever it is that we had to do when we were in drama class from the 7th grade to the 12th grade.
Right. So you were then, I take it, born and raised in California. You've never been out of the state, or?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
You've been raised and born in California. You've never been out of the state in regards to acting or plays or anything like that?
I've been in California pretty much my whole life. I did a small stint for about maybe half a year in the mid-90s, but it wasn't really something that I felt was going to work for me, because it was extremely expensive. It was a whole different vibe. And so I took that from Heather Graham, whom I dated at one time in my life. When we were 18 years old, we met in Hollywood. And so she was living in New York for a while after she did Drugstore Cowboy, and she's like, just come out here. But, you know, it depends on how much money you were making back then. In order to live in New York, you had to make a lot of money.
Right.
So I stuck to L.A. instead. So I've traveled to about maybe 9 countries. You know, based, you know, with my mother, we've gone a lot of places and had some fun. She just got back from Spain for her 25th anniversary, and, you know, and but I just mainly stayed focused on myself, and so I started doing a lot of other things that were kind of like keeping me from getting work, basically, or
right.
keeping me from staying focused.
So now, have you had like past relationships that tried to, you know, guide you in a different way with your acting at all, or no?
With the women in the movies I was acting with?
Well, no, what I mean is, like, have you ever had, or were you ever in a relationship with someone where they thought, maybe you shouldn't go into this type of acting, you know, maybe you should try this, or, you know, has anybody tried to influence you to go into other things than what you wanted to do?
Absolutely. In my first real relationship that I ever had, I mean, my first serious one where I wanted to get married, I had a house already. The lease was auctioned by in 1992, going to 93, and I was living with an actor named R.A. Mihailov. Mihailov plays Leatherface in the first Chainsaw Massacre Part 3. He's done a lot of other horror films. So I was living there with him. We had this two-bedroom house, beautiful house in Glendale. It was actually L.A., but it was between Glendale and Eagle Rock. And my fiance, her name was Veronica. We gave her last name, but, you know, I was really in love with this woman. I mean, she was just an office clerk at Office Depot. That's all she did. That's what she did. But
right.
she couldn't handle the lifestyle that I had. And I'm not saying that the lifestyle of an actor is always bad, you know, and she didn't understand how if we went somewhere, like what my publicist and my manager, that they were trying to make me the next biggest Mexican Latino actor they could at the time. You know, that's what they were trying to do with me. She didn't, you know, she didn't feel comfortable taking paparazzi photos or seeing me with like Jennifer Tilly, who was we had the same publicist at the time. We'd be taking pictures together, or you know, just a bunch of other well-known actors, and they would get her jealous. So she thinks I'm always automatically like sleeping with these girls, and I was never doing that. And sadly, that relationship didn't last because she couldn't handle the lifestyle, and she chose to go ahead and just be with the manager of her store and go live her life. And I'm happy for her. But other than that, most other women that I've dated, it's very, very difficult because it's tough because, you know, I would think that by now people would say, why aren't you married? I said, well, I don't have to be married. I don't want to be. Why don't you have kids? Maybe I do have them. I just don't know about it. LOL, you know, I don't know.
Right.
But most of the time now I really take a look at the woman and see what she's all about. I've dated everything from district attorneys to women that are bail bondsmen, police officers, to actors, models, teachers, all that good stuff. And, you know, if they're in the industry with me, then they know what it's like. And I know and I know what they're going through. But if we can work it out, great. Sometimes it's easier to date someone in the industry, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's better to date someone outside of it. So long as you pay attention to your lover, that's most important. But, you know,
well, see, that's why I was curious, too, like, you know, because, you know, I look at, I'm not in your industry, okay? So I'm not sure always if it's okay to ask. Is it actually easier to date someone in the industry, or is it actually better to date someone that's outside the industry that doesn't have that that connection to say, hey, I think you should do this instead of what you're doing, or you know what I mean? Kind of try to influence you different.
You know, that's a really good question. And I have to tell you, that's a really, really good question. You got a great partner there.
I told you we shoot from the hip.
I think, you know, after watching what I went Rick James go through, I learned that, you know, Rick could have any woman he wanted.
Right.
That's because he was already established as this world famous, you know, icon of a singer, you know.
Right.
So I think I learned that, you know, if I'm gonna date you and you're not in my industry or you're even in my industry, and you tell me I should go do something else, then you don't believe in me, and if that's the case, I don't think we need to be together. Because I believe in what you're doing, so hey. You know, I know everybody's got to pay their bills, of course. But I'm finding it now that it's a lot easier. Like right now I'm in San Jose, right, visiting family. Now I'm in this bar. And I go to a lot of bars, and we'll get into the bar area aspect, I'm sure, later on about something else. But it's hard because, you know, I can meet somebody here, and I tell them shit about what I do because it doesn't matter what anyone does to meet somebody. But if they find out what I do because somebody opens their mouth, you know, and then it's like all of a sudden, do they really want me for me, or do they want me for what I do? So,
exactly, it's very hard. Even not in your industry, you know, it's like that in everyday life. You know, the sad thing is, it's hard to find someone that you can actually connect with and feel comfortable with, but have that have the same sense of showing each other the same respect and compassion and everything, no matter what kind of job it is you have. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get where you're at with that. And, you know, like I said, that's what, you know, I've never asked any of the members that have come on the show here that before, because I thought, ooh, I didn't know if I could or not. So I thought, oh, what the hell? I'm just going to shoot it out.
I date actresses. I meet them, I date them, actresses, models all the time. I mean, you know, the date, trans, whether, I mean, I have a lot of female, I mean, whatever. I mean, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But then there's times where I'll just be in a store, like with Veronica, for instance, when I was at Office Depot, I went and bought a bunch of stuff that I didn't even need. I mean, listen to you guys, both of you two. I mean, I went in there and bought like $300 worth of stuff, filing cabinet, all the stuff that I don't need, just so I could see her and look at her. And then that brought it back the next day and said, you know, I don't need this. And I told her why. And so that was a special moment. It just depends, you know. I mean, I think the hardest ones to date, though, can be our dancers and bartenders, though. Those are the hardest ones to date.
Right.
Yeah, for me,
well,
they are.
What
kind
of dancers? Like exotic dancers, pole dancers,
exotic,
or?
I don't know. Pole dancers, like strippers, pole dancers, go-go dancers. Because I dated this gal, and she was really a lot of fun. And she was, she had the greatest job. She was it's called a fly girl, because she was a fly girl by day and a pole dancer by night. She worked for an airline. And at nighttime, when she'd be gone for like 2-3 days, and she'd come back, she'd go do some pole dancing. I was like, wow, this is amazing, man, how she does her thing, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of cool. But it just, I guess it's really about, if the connection's there, it's there. I mean,
that's what everything in life, you know, as long as you can connect to something, it's cool. As long as it's in a positive way. If it's in a negative way, there's no reason to waste
time. If you look at Emilio Rivera and Yadi Rivera, his wife, their relationship is so amazing. I mean, every time I see pictures of them or I see them in person, I tell Emilio, I said, I'm so proud of you. I mean, you guys must you guys know what you're doing. You know? Or Jimmy Smits and Juan de Jesus, you know, I've known all these people a long time. You know,
right.
And it's amazing to see stuff like that, or like Kurt and Goldie. Sure, it can happen, but, you know, you have to really want it like that, you know. But I think the best example right now is Yadi Rivera and Emilio Rivera. They're just the most beautiful couple in the world.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Rivera is a very humble person.
Yes. Yeah, well, he's got 22
and
years.
And I've enjoyed a couple of times, you know, I've spoken with him on the show here, and just simply down to earth, amazing human being, you know.
You know, I was with him, at a screening of a film he did. I think I did something nice. I went to the event today that Philip put up, and I put some pictures in there. Because I was just with Jimmy and Emilio and Eddie Olmos and Julian Cesario. Julian Cesario was also on that, so I think he did a one or two episodes. I don't know how many he's done, but I was with them, and Emilio started. He was the star of this film called Water and Power, and it's for the Latino Los Angeles Film Festival. And so
yeah,
I was invited.
In
we all went. Pardon me.
Yeah, it comes out in May.
Like, oh, it's coming on tonight.
No, it comes out in May.
Oh, okay. So I'm there, and I see him, you know, and we've been trying to go to this place called Fat Cells for like a while now. It's either him or Ron Tarantino are always at Fat Cells. I'm like, well, when are we going to go, you know? So long story short is I see him at the screening. The screening was great, great movie. I know the director, Richard Montoya. I know the actors are in it. And then when we go to this little after party at the Hard Rock Cafe right there, you know, in Hollywood Boulevard, you know, I get there and I know Emilio doesn't drink and all that. So I tell the waitress, can you do me a favor right now, get them a banana split. And as soon as I sent the banana split to him and Paul Renteria, who was there, Paul Renteria, I think Paul's done a couple episodes of SOA too. They were getting up to leave already. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. What are you doing? I go, dude, I just ordered you guys a banana split. He goes, oh, no, you did not. You know, and the face he gave me and the hug he gave me was like, wow, that's so beautiful of you, brother. Man, that's so nice of you. I said, well, some other time then, I guess. He goes, absolutely. But, yes, Emilio is a beautiful man, very beautiful person.
Now, is there anything that you have coming in the future in regards to anything in movies? That we should be looking for?
Yes. I got Foreign Land, which I shot a year ago, which I'm very shocked that it wasn't at the La Lice, the film festival, the Latino film festival. I play a guy named Roger, directed by Rafi Gurgis. It stars Jeffrey Lycon and Alex Franca, who's like this really big star on MTV now, and Art Bonilla is one of the leads in it, his daughter Giselle Bonilla, myself, Rodney Eastman, who's been around for ages, Jay Montalvo, and just, I mean, the cast that they got for this film, for the budget, was amazing. And I'm very proud of this character, very proud of this character.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about it or no?
Sure, sure. It's a really, really great story. I can give you the basic. It's really a story about Latinos, you know, about how they're not legal residents. And what happens is a story about a young guy who's got dreams. He's smart. He's got a great GPA and gets himself to a college. And all they need is you know, just proof of birth. And he comes to find out through, you know, his family that he was never really born there, that he was really a legal resident in Los Angeles. And then things go awry. He gets deported. Alex Franco, who plays the female lead, is a runaway from towards the East Coast, somewhere around there. And she runs away and starts stealing and doing things. And then, you know, she uses another girl's name, who's a Latina name, a Mexican name, and ends up getting deported to Mexico, too. So they get stuck over there. But where I come into this thing is I play this sort of reformed druggie, but still he's a druggie. He's got women in his bed. He's just like, you know, his cousin shows up at 3 in the morning. He's 20 years old. I haven't seen him in 12 years. He's got three runaways with him that are like 18 years old. I'm like, what the fuck you guys want? What do you want me to do for you? You know? And I got this creepy-looking hairdo and thick goatee and, you know, when I heard it looks like, it makes it look like I got dead bodies in the house. You know?
Right.
So, but it's a great story about how do you get that back home and claim your citizenship, really, is what it's about.
Okay.
And it's a great story, a great script, and I can't wait to see it come out. I mean, I think they wrote a really good story.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to come out myself.
IMDb it. It's on IMDb. I think, as a matter of fact, I was shocked they even put my name on the poster. I mean, they took all these great people and put us all on their poster. I was like, oh, that's so nice of them. It's always nice when your name's on the poster, you know.
Right. Now, let's go into Sons of Anarchy, if that's all right.
Sure.
When or how long did it actually take you to go in to do a reading for the part?
Just think about, hold on one second. My battery, I'm going to plug it in. Hold on one second.
Okay.
Are you there? I'm sorry about that.
Yes.
Oh,
that's
sorry.
Fine.
Yeah. So now I won't lose you.
That's
Wendy
okay.
O'Brien is a very, very, very good casting director. She's very good. I just got a call one day back in, like, I don't know, season 4, so that was like 2011, like, was it, or 10 or 11, I think it was. And I went in and read, just typical reading, you know, you give her your basics, you come back again and go on tape. And after tape, I went on to producers, and then I got to meet with Kurt and a couple other producers there. And they were looking for this guy named Angel Gans. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I really still find him as a very complex character because he never really made sense to me, you know, but that's the way Kurt is. Kurt doesn't have to make sense because whatever he does great. I mean, from what I heard what happened last night, I didn't see the episode, so it took me about 3 weeks to a month maybe to get the first gig, and that's
okay.
All it was going to be, and that was it. And then they brought me back. I think that was for either Kiss or Booster. I don't remember which one it was for at the time. And they brought me back for another one because he's not, you know, he's not running with anybody. You know, he's not Mayan. He's not with Sam Crow. He's somebody that wants to be a part of something, but he knows a lot of information, so they want to use him for information. So he's really not a nice guy. Yeah, he's just this guy that likes to use drugs and just give out information if he can get money for it. He's really a really horrible person. And so yeah, it's been about three to four weeks to get the first one. And then the second one was just offered back to me to come back, which was an honor. I mean, because, I mean, that's the biggest thing I should tell Emilio Rivera. It was like, dude, when are they going to bring me back again? I've already done two episodes of four. I mean, I want to come back in five. And he said to Greg, his attitude was like, dude, you're not dead yet, so you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, but Wendy O'Brien is really good. She's a really good cast director. She's got a great keen eye. And I'm real proud right now that she's got a Jacob Argus on the show right now, who's a great friend of mine, a great actor.
Yeah,
so,
he plays
Rack,
correct?
He plays, what's his character name? He's only been on like three episodes so far, but he's the only Mexican on the table right now. That's sort of the, he plays, what is the character name? I mean, you might have to Google him yourself.
I think he plays Rat.
No, I think it's like Martinez or some Martinelli or so. I don't know. You could be right. I don't know. I just know they passed him in like about 2 weeks ago. You know, and I'm really glad to see him on there because Jacob is a really, really good actor. Really good.
Yeah, he got passed in with my friend Rusty and a couple other guys.
Yeah, I know Rolo Milando really well, Molino and all them. I know him. I know Aldo Gonzalez very well. You know, I put pictures of those up today, you know, for you guys, you know, for the event thing, just to be, you know, cool and stuff. But you know, guys like Aldo, you know, and Rolando and myself, or you know, Tanika Martinez or Danny Trejo and Julian Sestario, you know, Emilio Rivera. You know, I mean, there's so many great Latinos that they brought in to the show. I mean, to the show, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah, Emilio comes back next week.
Yeah, you know, Emilio, I always ask him, I think I'm coming back next week, brother, you know, but I'm doing all these other things. He's on Gang Related right now, which is a great show. I'm jealous because Julian Cesario has got a guest spot, and I'm like, well, when is it my turn? But right now, I got a finger that's like so out of whack that I an insurance company will not bond me to work right now at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the Sons of Anarchy thing that I liked about it the most was the mystery of it all. You know, I didn't think Aldo and I were even talking about this when we were hanging out at the Rainbow on Sunset about a couple months ago. You don't know what's going to happen to you when you get there. You don't know anything. You don't know shit. Kurt doesn't tell any of you to tell you shit.
No, he doesn't.
You get this fucking character, right? You're like, okay, I got this character. Okay, so I go to this table read. I could be reading, you know, John Doe, but I thought I was supposed to be playing, you know, Angel. But then in the end, it's like, okay, no, you're going to be playing, you know, fucking, you know, Michael something something. I'm like, what? And then you'll play this role, and he expects you to deliver, like, on the spot. Which is really great because it puts you on edge and puts a challenge to you. And then the best thing about it, when it comes time to die, he doesn't tell you when you're going to die. He tells you right on the spot. Okay, today you're dying. It's over with. See you later. So it's like you never know anything. And I think that's what makes him a brilliant writer because he doesn't want to give his stuff away, you know. And he's got a great wife. I've known Katie for, oh, God, she's like 20-some years now. When I used to hang out on the set, I was struggling as an actor. I go to with David Faustino, who played Bud Bundy on Married with Children. I go to the set of Married with Children. I go eat all the free food over there with them and hang out. Stuff like that. But also, the show itself, though, is a really good show. I'm very proud of the show. I'm proud that I was a part of the show.
They're their number one show in history.
Yeah, and it took me a minute to really realize that because, you know, I have to realize that any work that I get that I'm proud of is always good work, even if it's for free or if it's for a dollar. You know, of course we gotta pay the bills, but working for someone like him, like Kurt, you know, who's a brilliant, brilliant person, a brilliant creator, and working with guys like, you know, Charlie Hunnam, who is, oh my God, that man is like so, he's a sweetheart. I don't ever call him in fucking sweethearts either. He's a sweetheart. You know, Kimmy Coates, I've known for years, you know, so it's just, you know, and now, I mean, with Jimmy, I've known Jimmy for so long. I mean, it's like, I mean, what a great way to bring him in and then bring Wanda, his wife, in too. And and then to bring in, you know, Peter Weller as a director now, you know, and as an actor. I mean, it's like, wow, he's really pulling some really good people. You know, and then Donald Logue, oh my God, honestly, as much as I love everybody on that show and everyone's talented, Donald Logue pulled it off the best thus far. He was the badass thus far.
Wow. Yeah, it's a small world.
What do you guys think about Donald Logue's character? I mean, wasn't he was like crazy?
Yeah, it's kind of because I pretty much know all those guys for a long time. And, you know, even though everybody's sworn to secrecy, you still get stuff here and there. But I pretty much know what's going to happen the rest of the show.
This privilege. No.
Excuse me?
Well, that was the thing. That was about me. That was about me bringing me back for the season. And they're already done. They're done now. I believe they're done now. They got one episode left. I think the last time I spoke to Jimmy like a month ago, they were done. But earlier on, I was like, well, am I coming back now, or am I going to come back? Are we going to do one more season after that? Am I going to come back? I don't want to die now. You know, the answer came, and when it came, it's like, okay, well, so what? Well, you'll know when the time is right. That's the answer to give. You'll know when the time is right. So everybody's getting their throat slit this whole season. You know, and then, so it's pretty interesting how they're doing it right now.
Yeah.
They're actually leaving me to believe that they may not be coming back next year. They're leading me to believe
that.
No one ever told me that. But.
Yeah, no, it's going to be there'll be one more season, and then there's talk of a show called The Original Nine.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad that everybody is doing really well on there. You know, I'm real proud of Charlie. I'm glad I got to know the man. I'm real proud of Kim, and I'm just proud of everyone, all of them. Emilio, especially. I mean, what a great role to have. You know, I know Emilio's only in and out once in a while, but you know what? It doesn't matter. You know, he's a badass. Straight up. And working with Danny and Benito in season four was a dream for me, because I've known Danny for a long time and I've always wanted to work with him. You know, so that was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just I saw Danny and everybody at Emilio's last birthday party, but I've seen him since then too. But it's he has a great block party when he does that. Not just
Emilio or Danny.
Oh, Emilio, they take over.
Oh, Emilio, yeah, he always has a block party. Usually it's in February, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, then shit. But if I've already met you, and I just don't remember yet, or what?
I'm sorry.
I said, have we already met? And I just don't remember. Or?
Maybe. Maybe.
Ron Tarantino? I mean, I just finally met him for the first time, and I didn't even know that. Like, you know, because I always see him around and on Facebook, and he's always, you know, he's on set a lot. And I was like, I never met the man. You know, I've known Paul Renteria for a while, for off and on, but Ron,
yeah,
Ron's a cool cat.
I've stayed quite a few times at Paul's house. His wife's a great cook.
Yeah, I think Ron, Paul just got back from like South Dakota, North Dakota, or something like that.
I think he's going through Colorado right now.
Oh, yeah, he is. Well, now, you know, I think for me, you know, I mean, I'm proud to have been a part of the show. You know, and I'm always be grateful to Kurt and to Wendy, but at the same time, I've moved on to, unless something else comes up, which that could be any time they want it to be. But right now I'm producing four movies right now. That's the genre and era that I'm getting into now.
Yeah, because I understand a lot of people do that. They get that other niche or other itch when they had their downtime.
Yeah, because, you know, like right now with my finger all stitched up and, you know, a pin in it, you know, I broke the tip of my ring finger on my left hand. You know, I can't. There's a movie out that Jacob actually is going to be doing called and Antonio Banderas and Martin Sheen called The 33. You know, and I'm I really wanted to be a part of that film, but it's not going to look like it's going to happen because I'm still injured and they can't take that risk. You know, they sent me to Chile, and to make the film. No, they won't do it. So once this all gets healed by January, right now I think if I'm lucky, knock on wood, without jinxing anything, I might be into production on a short film that I wrote that I'm very proud of, and I got like 3 great, well-known actors with like at least 80 movies to their name. They're going to be in this thing for me for free. And then from there, I'm waiting on my investors to hopefully give me the $1.25 million that I need to shoot my film that I wrote, which is really, really good. And I got people like Danny that'll be in it. I talked to Emilio about it. He read it. He said he read it on the toilet and laughed his ass off. So, yeah, so I'm kind of like doing that right now. And then when I can audition again, which will be pilot season, I'll be okay. You know, I mean, if I, you know, whatever happens, I can never predict what, you know, what work I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. Are there links that people can follow you? Like, do you have, like, pages or anything like that?
You know, I do. And, you know, it's, you know, I feel really bad about that sometimes, you know. It's not insecurity. It's really more about, like, I mean, I'm on Twitter, Paul Vasquez 122 on Twitter, and then I got The Real Paul Vasquez on Facebook. But, you know, I had this woman who has been very, very instrumental, so sweet and kind in helping me. She started actually the fan page on Facebook, and it's Crystal Tony Schmidt. And I don't know if you both know her or heard of her or anything like that. But I don't, she's got so many other pages she runs. And so she helps out Twitter and all that. But I'm not really, I'm the guy that has my iPhone with me. But my Facebook is always, I log in and log out. Twitter, I log in and log out. I don't have, you know, notifications 24/7. So I'm not really, telling everyone where I'm at right at this very moment. I mean, I was going to tell people where I was at tonight, you know, specifically for this interview. But, you know, everybody knows I was, I mean, well, whoever knew that I was going to do it, they know I'm doing it. But, yeah, you can find me on the real Paul Vasquez on Facebook or Paul Vasquez 122 on Twitter. Or you can go to the IMDb and find out some stuff. There's a lot of stuff missing in there. You go to IMDb Pro, or you can read bullshit like TMZ about me.
Well, we're going to go there.
Yeah.
You'd like to go there, go ahead. You can. I understand what happened, so if you want to tell your side of the story, go for it.
You know, it's funny because TMZ tried to get a hold of me, and they tried to get a hold of me. I don't know how the hell they got my email address, but they said we'd like to, you know, get your side of the story, because my manager, who's also my entertainment lawyer, Mark Bisgayer, he declined to comment on anything that happened that night. See,
yeah.
So what happened was that, you know, I'm like, well, first off, how the fuck you get my personal email address? So I'm thinking it's an inside job, you know. But who really knows, you know? So I think where I made the mistake is I made a comment inside the feed in there.
You gotta watch when you make comments, because in today's technology, you're gonna get
I'm not supposed to say anything, and you know, but they were pissing me off. Like people were saying things wrong that were so not true. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not perfect.
Well, you know, they do that sometimes just to irritate you, so you will come out and say something, and then you're mad, and then you say the wrong thing, and then they start posting that.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because, you know, it's like what I did not like first and foremost was the lie about me literally wanting to run out on a tab for $59. That's bullshit. I mean, why the fuck would I want to do something like that to somebody? I mean,
mm-hmm.
And if my credit card didn't work, I don't know why it didn't work. I really don't know why. So So, but the manager, the bartender knew me. The bartender knew me. Okay, I've been going in this place called the Dive Bar in San Jose. Whenever I'm in town, my hometown, which I can no longer stand even going to anymore, which I probably won't be going there very much anymore. People probably going to hate me for that. But, you know, if he knew me that well, the way he's nice to me, he wouldn't even sweat at it if there was a problem. But the owner, I guess, did know me. So I said, look, I was talking to some girl or something like that. And this girl, and this happens to me, like I said, all the time in South Dallas. We're talking to a girl. They'll have some guys with them. I don't know if it's her boyfriend or not, you know, and if it's not, they get jealous. And I didn't say anything to them about me. The manager opened his mouth and said shit about what I did. And I was like, dude, why did you do that? Please don't do that. So that turned into like, oh, my God, some girl's getting all crazy and stuff, blah, blah, blah. The long story short was I said, look, man, I got to go. So my tab was $56 or $59. They made it sound like I was buying rounds for the whole bar, which you cannot do for that kind of money. It's way more than that.
Yeah.
And my card didn't work. It didn't work. See, I've been a victim of identity theft. See, they don't know that. So when I go to certain bars, I'll use, like, a prepaid card. I'll put, like, a $500,000 on it. They use that. That way, if something goes wrong, it's no big deal, you know? So I go outside and say, like, let me call and find out what's going on. Well, the manager thinks I'm trying to leave. I'm like, nah, man, I'm calling my pops. Man, my pops and his girlfriend are going to come by and have some drinks with me. Well, he flies a police officer down. The police officer comes and says, what's the problem? But the problem is there is no problem. I want to pay this bill and leave. That's it. He goes, well, what's this stand over here for a second here? And I'm like, well, for what? Are you profiling me now because I'm Mexican? I mean, come on, man, give me a fucking break. Just watch your language. So watch my language for what? I'm not on parole. I'm not on probation. I can do whatever I want. I did not do anything wrong. I'm standing on the same property. I'm trying to take care of this bill. So that dude that was next to that girl comes down and starts taking pictures of me. So they put handcuffs on me. I go, man, you can't do that. He goes, well, yeah, we can. Then they sit me on the curb, which I heard was illegal to do. So there I am looking like an idiot on the curb, handcuffed, over this bill. And it's like, and then they somehow, some way, they were able, TMZ felt that I was that famous enough for them to buy my story. Which I would never understand. Why would they want to buy my story? I don't think of myself as being, you know, Tom Cruise or anything like that, you know? So in the end, what really was disturbing is how they treated me. You know, the manager really was really nice to me the way he always is. He always said, don't sweat it. Then I got a phone call from one of my really good friends, Beverly Ventura, who owns a place called The Caravan in San Jose, saying, Paul, why didn't you just call me? I would have came over there and I would have paid that bill. And I would have beat the shit out of the bartender when I was done paying it for him doing it. I don't know what happened. I don't know. So my dad had to show up. My poor pop, he showed up. But he was not mad. He was kind of laughing about it. And then paid the bill. And I'm like, and this is the best part. The best part is that night we went out for more drinks. You know, I was a little tipsy. I'm not going to lie. I was drinking. But that night, the next day when I woke up in the morning, you know, hungover and stuff with my dad's like, well, go get us like a six pack or something, you know, and we'll go, you know, kind of like, you know, shake it off and we'll go walk the flea market or something. Like, sure thing, pop. So I put on my jeans, and you know, in your jeans pocket, you got like the little small little pocket on the top. You're familiar with that? Yeah. I had, there was something in there. I go, what the hell is this? And I pull it out. I had $200 in there. I had $200 in my pants that whole time. When that happened, they didn't know it. So, but what I think what they did where they were wrong was saying Sons of Anarchy star walks out on tap. That was wrong for them to say that. That was completely wrong, and that, you know, that was an insult to Kurt Sutter and to the cast of the show. Because I'm not one of the stars of the show.
Yeah, I think that might be detrimental.
Well, I think it was really detrimental. I think in the end, I got a lot of phone calls from friends and other people in the industry saying, you know, there's no such thing as bad press, and what happened to you was so very juvenile. But I thought I was going to get a call from, you know, from the producers of SOA, but I don't even think they cared. I mean, like Mark Fisker said, my lawyer, he goes, 3 days, that stuff blows away, Paul. It just goes away. That's it. You know, so just leave it alone and just move on and don't answer TMZ. Let them be scumbags like they are, because that's what they are. you know. They're there to destroy you.
Yeah.
And that bar, the dive bar, is the most piece of shit bar I've ever been to. I'll never go there again. And, you know, they lost a good customer. And whoever that dude was that sold me out, well, you know what, he's much of a punk than I am, than he's saying that I am. I mean, he sold me out. Think about it. It sounds like he's a piece of shit to be selling me out. For what? To make, a few $100? Because some girl that you like me? Come on, man, give me a break, you know? But that's the thing about this industry. When you go to different cities, shit like that happens. Oh, well. But what's really sad too about that too, though, is that, you know, if you were to look me up on Google, you know, Paul Vasquez and whatever comes up with it, you know, like say SOA, say all these nice things about me. Now it's all this negative shit before all the good stuff started.
Yeah.
But it's so so minor, I'm not even worried about it more. I just wanted to clarify that. It blew it out of proportion. It really did. They got their money. I didn't go to jail. And everybody went their own way. I'll never go back there again. And they were doing what they needed. I guess they were just doing what they felt they needed to do to make themselves feel like they were somebody. Who knows? At my expense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's usually how they do it, just to get, you know, the key to the whole story was Sons of Anarchy star.
Yeah, and I'm not, and they kept saying, I saw the comment, but like, he's only been on like a couple episodes. I'm like, I know that, and I've never claimed to be one. And so, and I'm glad that, you know, I was able to clarify that here with you guys. And I told you that when we talked on the phone last week, and I even told that to my last interviewer, Cindy, back in several months ago. No, I never claimed that at all. That's just the way that they did it to make it look like there was a story there. But you know what? I think if Kurt or some of his other colleagues were to ever hear me say someone or ever hear anyone else say that they were a star on that show and they're not, then he will say something about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I respect every actor for whatever level that they are in this industry, whether they're the leads like Charlie or something like that. Of course he's the star of the show. I respect that. You know, but Charlie will be come up to me and say, "Hey, man, you've done two, three episodes. You're all good. Don't even trip on that." So nobody cared, and I just left alone. That was it. But I'm glad I got to air it out a little. I'll probably get yelled at by my manager, but oh well, who cares? It's water under the bridge, you know.
Past is past. You just move ahead and keep going forward.
Well, you know, there's people on that show. No, I won't name that event. There's some shit worse than me. Trust me. You know, I mean, there's a lot of crazy things going on. Because nobody lives the perfect life. I mean, everybody has a path, you know. And, you know, and I had my past where I got in trouble. And I went through Hollywood thinking I was all that in the younger days and drinking a lot and thinking I was going to be this big movie star. And all I did was just destroy me, you know. Until you get older and realize, you know, that's not the way to do it.
No.
So if ever you get tired of your acting, what do you think you would find yourself doing?
If I got tired of acting?
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. You know what? I don't think I could get tired of acting, even if I didn't make any money at all. I would probably, producing is my big thing right now. I mean, I really am focusing on 4 movies right now, and I'm really, really like, real comfortable with my investors right now and getting these films made. And, Dean Devlin, I don't know if you guys ever heard of him. He's the producer of Godzilla Independence Day. He did acting back in the 80s with Adam Baldwin, who was like Full Metal Jacket and My Bodyguard and stuff.
Right.
And he just wasn't getting any work as an actor, because I wanted to be a producer. And, you know, and I think producing is the way to go. But when I give up acting, probably not. I don't think I can. But producing, I will do. But if I had to go do something outside of the industry, if that's what you're asking,
right.
Wow. I was experienced at one time when I invested in a web hosting company. such a big business now. I would honestly, I really wouldn't know what to do. I have to go learn something new, which I have no problem doing. I have to,
right.
I have to end it all right now and say, yeah, I'm gonna go do something new. I'll just pick a trade and go learn it and do it. I wish I could do guitar like my dad and be a guitar player, but that's never gonna happen. I don't got 6 years playing like he does. My dad's a badass, so I can't play like that.
Right.
Now, what kind of, if you don't mind me asking, what kind of music was it that your dad played?
Oh, my dad played a lot of stuff with, like, studio sessions with Three Dog Night, Creedence, like Clapton. He plays a lot of, he's more into the 70s, 60s classic rock.
Right.
He's played with a lot of bands in San Francisco. He's just really, really good at what he does. You know, I mean, and he gets mad when I videotape him, you know, just in private, you know, just for fun. You know,
right.
Like I think I threw some on YouTube on him. Just sitting there with a beard behind him with one of his, like, Gibson Customs. He owns, like, about 30 guitars and stuff. And just watch him just jam, just do his thing. And he's just really good at what he does. And he's played with some of the best, you know. And I'm very happy and proud to say that he is my father. Though we have our differences at times, and the same with my mother, we have our differences at times. But I grew up with two parents that are both eclectic in their own way. I got a mother who's
right.
a chef. I got a father who's a guitar player, and I got introduced from both sides of the family to some of the best music in the world that I'll ever remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you know how to cook? Like your mom?
Do I know how to cook like my mom? I can cook. I honestly, I can cook, but like her, no.
Nah, nobody cooks like my mom.
Yeah, no. You know, I mean, my grandmothers taught my mom how to cook when she was like little. You know, my grandmothers were like the best cooks in the world too. But I gotta tell you. Well, my mom cooks now that she doesn't have a restaurant anymore, and she just said, I don't want to do the restaurant thing, and she's still young. She's only like 58. She just said, hey, you know what, I'm going to just do some private stuff. Well, she was my private. She was like people like Pete Wozniak or John Fry from Prize Electronics. You know, guys live out where she lives out in the Bay Area, come to her house, and they eat at her house. And
right.
they pay her a good amount of money just to come there and eat. Yeah. And she's got a chef partner who's really good, and she just enjoys her life, you know. She's wealthy. She does her thing, and she just wants me to be happy and keep doing what I'm doing. My stepfather does what he does, and my dad does what he does, and you know, and that's it. There's just really the three of us, you know.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you spiritual?
Absolutely. Straight up, I'm a Catholic, no doubt.
Now, were you raised to go to church every Sunday, or was it just a belief that you do on your own, or?
I used to go to church as a kid. Well, first I was forced to go. There was no way around. Wait, I didn't go to church.
You mean the Catholic school?
Oh, yeah, Catholic catechism, all that. If I didn't go, I got my ass kicked.
yeah, I know. I had to go through the same thing. And in Chicago back in that day, it was, if you didn't listen, you got smacked with the ruler or the pointer.
Oh, yeah. I know, 70s, it was typical to get smacked for something, but a chancla or a broom or something, a cuchara or something, whatever my grandma had, you know, put the jabon, the soap in your mouth, you're going to church.
Right.
But
keep doing this, you're going to hell.
Yeah, we know. But see, the thing is, though, you know, I went to all that. I went to church. I was in a lot of weddings when I was a kid. I did my first communion, you know, all that stuff. And I right now I'm wearing a rosary, you know. And I believe in God. I really do. Jesus Christ, you know. And I believe in Catholicism, Catholic. My mother's Jewish now. She converted to Judaism when she married my stepfather. So her whole lifestyle is completely different. Though they do Hanukkah, they also do Christmas just for me. But, you know, my mom's the Mexican Jew, I call her. You know, she had a Jewish reception at a Mexican, Jewish wedding and a Mexican reception. The mariachi thing you have in the Gila. That's how crazy my mom's wedding was. Yeah, my mom's pretty Looney Tunes at times.
So you were raised Catholic by your mom's choice?
My grandma Josie, my mom's mother, and my grandma Daria, my father's mother. Yeah. I mean, my grandmother, when they passed away back in 2001, 4 months apart, I asked for two things. I know this is going to sound crazy, but I asked for my grandma's tortilla roller. You know, made out of metal. I never got it. But I did get my dad's mother. I did get her Bible. I always wanted.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, it was really sad about that. You know, and I loved my grandmother so much. I mean, if they were still here today, they would totally be like, they were so non-judgmental, so compassionate, so nurturing. You know, they would just, if they were here, you know, when one passed away in July, all I kept praying to God about was, please, God, don't let my grandma ask me about how my other grandma's doing, because if I got to tell her, I can't tell her the truth. She's gone. I hear no more.
Right.
Yeah, but they're beautiful women. They cooked well. They're spiritual. They love Jesus. Yeah, we had the Lady Guadalajara's. We had the Lavelas, the candles and everything all over the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
If you don't have anything else, I already told you before, you're welcome anytime. And
yeah, I'm here. What were you saying?
I said if we don't have any more questions.
Questions. You know what? I'm just proud to be doing what I'm doing. That's what I can say. I'm proud to be, you know, working on these four films right now. I'm real proud to be friends within the industry. A lot of great actors out there, Latinos, non-Latinos. And you know what? I'm doing what I love doing. And you know, and if I keep doing it, I'm gonna keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy about it, you know. And it's always been my dream, and it's just something that I just fulfilled. Were you guys have people calling in tonight?
Yeah, but every once in a while, I got some trouble with the server bullshit, and sometimes the calls get dropped. So basically, when I call the helpline and I talk to the person as I'm talking to you guys, I'm doing it through chat, I get told, well, we're working on it. Well, okay, you're working on it, and I'm in the middle of an interview, and I can't unmute anybody.
That's okay.
So, you know, normally there would be quite a lot of people. Unfortunately, you just have the two of us. Sorry.
You know, hey, you know, you guys have been awesome. I mean, I'm
right now. Right now, just what I see with the chat going, there's like about 44,000 people right now around the world listening.
Right.
Wow, that's a lot. Wow. I'm impressed with that.
Tomorrow it'll cook up another 10 or 15. There's a lot of time. Like, the people that listen in London right now, it's about 4 a.m. over there. And then I got a bunch of Marines that listen in Afghanistan and wherever they're at around the world, as well as Navy guys. I plug that shit
right
all the time when I'm on the ship.
Well, you know, I actually have a friend here. I have a friend here.
Go ahead.
He was here with me. It's a great place for you to be here. And you know, I'm just like I said, I'm very easygoing guy, you know. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw all the last pictures of us over at La Leaf, you know, that we had. You know, when I was with everybody there, you know, I felt so embraced by my own culture, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean, I don't just see one culture as one culture that works in the industry, but I know that my culture is starting to move up in the industry and do much better now. you know,
right.
And, you know, and when you're with people, like I said, Emilio or Jimmy or Eddie Olmos or like Jay Montalvo or Julian Cesario or Richard Montoya or Jay Hernandez or, I don't know, geez, the list was on and on that night. You know, it was just amazing to just be in that company. I think I need to lose weight, though.
Well, a lot of people don't understand the Hispanic heritage unless if they go and look into it and get information. But that's with any heritage. It's not just the Hispanic community. And, yes, you are right. There are more and more Hispanic shows coming on or, you know, comedians coming out, actors coming out, actresses, you know, and so on and so forth. And it brings a big difference, you know, out into the industry as well as other ethnicities.
Yeah, it does, you know. And, you know, the one thing that I've always struggled with, I mean, like I said, there could have been many times where I could have worked a lot more than I've worked, but that was my choice. That I didn't do as much as I could have done. That was my choice because I was being self-destructive, or I ended up in jail a few times for being stupid. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. But when it really gets down to the wire of it, I used to go out for roles that, I mean, I remember Keith Marin told me one time, he was directing a commercial. It was like, he looked at me like, what are you doing here? I was like, well, what do you mean? He says, well, you don't even look like what I need. I mean, I need someone really Mexican. I said, well, I am a Chicano. I am Mexican. I know you are, Paul, and I know you speak Spanish, but I need a Mexican, though. I mean, like, he wanted someone that's dark and looks like he's from Mexico. So I said, it's really hard because someone like Jacob Vargas, who's on the show now, he gets a lot of really great work. You know, he's got the skin tone, and he's a beautiful man. I love the guy to death, and you know, or something like that. But you put like
well, Benjamin Bratt, he's not Hispanic; he's Native American.
I know, but he's got the skin tone that can put him in that category if they want it.
Well, yeah, because he did a good role in an older movie, Blood In and Blood Out.
Yeah, I read for that film and for Taylor Hackford. I read for that and American Me. I got turned down for American Me because they said, Paul, you look too white. You look like a white boy.
Right.
You know, but though they had William Forsythe, but who can beat William Forsythe at that time? William Forsythe is like the shit. He's the bomb, that dude. I mean, he's one of my heroes. But, you know, Blood In, Blood Out, they had, who was it?
They had a good cast in that movie.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
It was the one guy that was Damien Chapa. So what I ended up finding out in the end is that my agent at the time back then was Cynthia Campos, and she was sending me out for, you know, she said, you know, I'm not sending you out on these Mexican roles anymore. You're going out for everything. So then I started going out for everything. Even when I did that thing with J-Lo, I think it's the title wrong. Is it Hotel Malibu or Malibu Hotel or something like that?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, it wasn't a Hispanic thing, you know, and even like Roger in this foreign land, he doesn't have to be Hispanic either. So I can play a lot of different characters because if you look at a lot of the photos of me, I look different a lot. They say, you know, I change my look, whatever. I try to be my goal is to be like a chameleon kind of an actor, you know, like an actor
right.
who can whatever you give me, bring it on. Let me study it. Let me put it together, and let me just go in and deliver. Whatever you do with the character, when I'm done, it's your business. It's not my business. You know, that's what Johnny Depp said one day. He said, "It's whatever they do with my character when I'm done, it's their business." You know,
right.
And like with SLA, it's, you know, he's got so many different people on there, and I still don't understand how he can even keep the show going the way he writes. But like his team of writers are so huge. I mean, he's got his mind's got to be working like 24/7.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I didn't mean to, you know, say anything in regards to like Benjamin Bratt, only because I'm half Native American. So, you know,
No.
Like I said, it's actually, you know, there are certain types of Native Americans that do look Hispanic. you know, but then there are ones that can stick out and you see the Native American, you know, so he is able to portray different types of roles because, as you said, of his skin tone, you know, does look Latino. He does
But he's also talented,
Native.
Too. He's very talented. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you got people like Clifton Collins Jr., who has the same skin tone as me, who's very talented, you know, or you got Jose Yanke, you got Yancy Arias, you know, there's so many people, you know, and sometimes it's just like, you know, who's the person who's going to be right for this role?
Right.
You know, and like the 33 that's coming out, the one they're going to do in Chile, 33 coal miners.
Right.
They all got to be Chilean, or at least close to it, from all Chile, then some of them got to be from where? I don't know exactly. I don't remember the whole story. I remember when it happened. Are they all Chilean? I don't know. See? So, but, you know, but things like that. But I try not to really think too hard about that anymore. I just go where the work takes me. And
right.
Nowadays movies are being made for so dirt cheap, which is really kind of, it's good and it's bad because actors aren't making what they used to make anymore on films, like they used to in the 80s and the 90s. You know, now the big money is in television.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever, you know, looked into, you know, like going into a TV series?
Oh, God. I've read for so many shows. I mean, I wanted to stay on Malibu Hotel or Hotel Malibu, whatever you call it. You know, but, I mean, or Freddy's Nightmares at the time. You know, what's funny about the Freddy's Nightmares episode is that when I did that episode, Brad Pitt was already slated to do the episode right after me, and he was already on set with me preparing to do the episode that was going to follow mine. You know, so it's like, it's kind of funny how those things work, you know. But, you know, I would love to do a series, absolutely. But, you know, it just depends on what the show is and if I thought about what it takes and what they want. And of course I'll do it.
Right.
I mean, would I love to, that's the way to pick me up and keep me on longer as Angel Gans? Absolutely. You know, I would love to continue on going with it, but you know, you just can't, you just got to just let Kirk do what he does, you know? But I know pilot season's coming up and that's my time to shine and go in there and deliver it and see if I can get hired for something good. But, you know, but I would like to end it with something is that, you know, there are some actors out there that I really do admire who are my heroes who actually helped me get to where I am today. If it weren't for them, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing. And as I was saying earlier, there was Charles Bronson, Clint Eastwood, Raul Julia was one of my heroes. Raul Julia was a beautiful actor. Sadly, he died at a very young age. Then we got James Remar, William Forsythe, Treat Williams, you know, even Paul LaMatt, who's a great actor, you know, and there's a younger generation of actors that are even close to my age that are really, really good at what they do, you know, and that's, I think, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is really good at what he does. I think Clifton Collins Jr. is really good at what he does as well.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Those are the ones. And I'll keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, then Meryl Streep and then Maria Conchita Alonso, the females, and Jodie Foster. I'm not female, so I can be like them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
Oh, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like right now, like the film that I wrote that I'm very proud of, I really want Maria Conchita Alonso to be the star of my movie. She wants to actually star in this movie. She's already given me, you know, letters of intent. She's been to production meetings with me. I'm having a hard time getting this film financed with her name attached. And it's not an insult to her. It's just the industry, the suits that are involved in it, the corporates, just don't realize what they're missing out on. I mean, when I first wrote the film, I wanted Mickey Rourke in it, too. You know, because I wrote the film a long time ago, and I put it away. And nobody wanted Mickey Rourke. Nobody wanted Maria. But yet The Wrestler gets made, and Mickey becomes a star again, which I've always loved Mickey. I know him personally. He's a great guy. But, you know, Maria Conchita Alonso has been around for a very long time, a very, very long time. she is somebody that I hate to say it like this, and I don't care if people get fucking mad at me because I don't give a shit, but people like Penelope Cruz, Salma Hayek, Jennifer Lopez, Sofia Vergara, you know, all these new Latina actresses that are out there, they need to recognize who was their predecessor, who came before them. We had Rita Moreno first, you know, and from Rita Moreno we had Maria Conchita Alonso, we had Sonia Braga, but all these other ones, they think that they were the ones that really did everything on their own, but they did, because Maria was the biggest star in the 80s, period, you know. And I think that if I get this money privately, then she will star in this film. She will be perfect. She's got a great body. She's still talented. She's beautiful. And I mean, think about it. She did Running Man with Schwarzenegger. She did Colors with Sean Penn. I mean, she's done everything from action to drama to comedy to sex to love, passion, all that stuff. You know.
Right.
So she deserves to be back on the map again. Though she's not gone anywhere, she still works. But why not give her that chance? What do they got to lose? Nothing.
Right.
You know, the fact that a lot of actors today, some of them don't acknowledge those that came before them. I think, you know, not that you have to, you can acknowledge whoever you want, but at least, you know, there are some out there that really did help you pave the way. I mean, Edward James almost paved the way for most of us, you know, and for Raul Julia. And for the females, Lupe Ontiveros, who passed away a few years ago, you know, was a good friend of mine. She paved the way for a lot of the Latinas too. But people forget about that. They just think about the paycheck sometimes.
Okay.
I'm sure that's true. Well, I'm done with my questions. Do you have anything going, Phil?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Just that if you got anything coming up, Paul, just text me and we'll bring you on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll keep you posted. Just keep an eye out for Foreign Land, and keep an eye out for a short film called Plug Alley.
Okay.
And I thank
road,
you.
I'll be starting it.
Go ahead.
And
go ahead.
Sorry we couldn't have questions tonight, but my friends will probably feel like, why not try calling, man, and I couldn't even get through. Hey, it's all right. Not a big deal. I had a really good time with you guys. Thank you so much for your time, your consideration, your compassion, your understanding, and I felt very comfortable. I think this is a very, 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 I think this is the best interview that was the last one I had. So
there you go.
Well, you're welcome. It was an honor to have you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to hopefully maybe doing this again sometime soon.
Okay, man. You take care.
All right, well, you guys have a nice evening. God bless you both.
You too.
Okay.
You too.
See you later.
Bye-bye. He's all right, guy.
Yeah. Everything was well.
Mm-hmm. And a few of his friends were there in the chat room. A few other people around. And one guy listening in China.
Now we're down to one person again. Well, hopefully we'll get some more, as long as they don't get caught.
That's true.
Those poor people, you know.
I don't know.
Think we have it bad here so much, and a lot of people don't realize how bad it is somewhere else.
What's going on with the tornado?
Oh my God! You know. Well.
See, actually, hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find this real quick because. I know you don't even have this yet, and I have it.
Well, have to rub something in, do we?
Whenever I can.
I know. That's just whenever. How you are. It's okay. It's part of that wit and charm.
Don't quit your day job.
I don't quit my day job.
Yeah, I know. Let me see. See if I can find this real quick. But
I was being complimenting on your wit and your charm, and
I thought
I was being sarcastic.
That's just, no, because I'm listening when I'm listening, you know what I mean?
I know. I know.
Looking for, let me see if I can find it. There you go. Right here. Okay. This is the promo. From the Sons of Anarchy for Season 6, Episode 12. It's called You Are My Sunshine. Loading up right now.
If you have a dog with bad
okay, you know, it's running slow right now.
Yeah, the computers have been going kind of slow.
Yeah, I know why. They're picking on everything.
I know.
Okay, here we go. Jacking up on me a little bit.
I can see how you've risen to your rank.
Fortunately, I inherited.
We all have a destiny.
2 weeks.
I got no say in what he does at the club.
You actually thought about that before you started killing people.
If she tries to kill those boys, Yamsi will hunt her down and kill us all.
The episode that leads to this season finale.
Don't worry. It ends well.
Sons of Anarchy. All new. Tuesday, December 3rd. On FX.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you wanna, you can check that. In fact, here, I'll send it to you right now.
Okay.
Okay. But, yeah, it's, last night's show was over the top.
It was.
Mm-hmm. What was your best part? Actually,
quite getting shot.
As you were watching, start from the beginning, but as you were watching it, what did you think?
Well, when I first put it on, because, like I said, a lot of times I watch it twice, because usually if I do it, like after when we're off the show, sometimes I'm just tired and I fall asleep, so I always, you know, do it first thing in the morning when I get up. So I'm able to sit there and watch everything while it's quiet in the house, you know. And so as it's starting, it's like, wow, which direction is this going to go? You know, I mean, because you got the Irish coming in, Irish were shot, you know, and everything else. Quay was shot, and you know, like my ultimate favorite part was when Clay got shot. That's the first. The other one is while Tara's in the vehicle and she's getting a call from the DA, you know, and then she makes up the lame ass excuse of, well, you know, it's the attorneys. I have to go meet with the attorneys. You know, like I said, it's just. There's just so much. And, you know, the funny thing is, because when Jax was talking to, well, I can't remember his name, the one that's dating Gemma, you know, when they were talking and, you know, before they got into the car and stuff, and then seeing in the background, it's like, he's just standing there. He's not talking in this part. You know what I mean? You know who I'm talking about, your friend.
Right.
And, you know, and but like I said, it was just, oh, and then, you know, Tara's asked to go in and do a little bit of mending that she could, you know, even though he had to be taken into the hospital and that. You know, there's just so many different factors in the last night. You know, like I said, the ultimate first that I enjoy was Clay being shot. But everything else just blended in that was just unbelievable, but not knowing how the twists and turns were coming into play. And so when you sat there and just watched it, I mean, you just had to eyeball it, not get away from the TV. You know, and that's usually why I'll put it on very early in the morning, because I hurry up and I do what I have to do, getting my dogs out, getting them back in. It's like, okay, now it's me time to the TV. And so I can focus more on it, but it was just so wicked and awesome. I mean, things were just unexpected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is Jax really going to turn anything over to, the district attorney there? Who knows?
Yeah.
That's been talked about in how many shows now in this season? You know, making the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to happen? We don't know.
I don't know. He made the deal. They were there as he promised.
Well, yeah, you know, but I think that, you know, it's at a point of, you know, a distraction.
Well, how is this a distraction? Because he said, I'll have them all there for you.
Well, that's true. But, you know, in some instance, don't you think it's going to be a distraction so he could do something else and he sends everybody else off in the other direction so no one's being watched?
That's cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I could do that.
That's what I meant. It's a different variable with that. You're not sure how
that
part's going to play.
You know, I wish I could do that in front of my house, these fuckers.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think it's the company. I think it's the powers that be, because they don't like when we say stuff.
Well, like I said, on Wednesdays I don't see what the issue is, because we just talk about the show, you know, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I was doing something wrong.
Me too. I've never been in trouble a day in my life.
Okay, your story.
No, that means I've never been to jail, never been to prison, you know. So, yeah, I can honestly sit there and say, ooh, I'm a Catholic goody-goody. For things I haven't gotten caught at, that was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to cut out of here now.
That's okay. I have four pieces left remaining on a pizza that I got, which is completely awesome. Never had it before. It was a new thing, and thank God I tried it.
Yeah. I think I'm going to
take it. From a friend of mine that I brought on the show last year.
Uh-huh.
He came up with a new concoction, a chicken Philly pizza. Oh, my God, it is to die for.
I don't know. I brought home, when I was there, and I went to my favorite haunts, and I grabbed barbecue sauce, I grabbed frozen beef, I grabbed frozen sausages. I'll be eating good for the next 6 months.
Well, yeah, you know, because as you know,
and I even,
there's
I
only
even,
certain things you can get here that you can't get in California.
Let me tell you, I found a guy here at a bakery that makes bread.
Really?
Really.
And does it taste
I even
awesome?
Showed him how to make an Italian poor boy we used to get on the west side.
Oh, my God, those things are to die for. Haven't had one since I was a teenager.
Yeah, and the best one is when you pop them in the oven and let them sit there for about 5 or 10 minutes, depending on how much you put on there.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Those are like heaven on its own. I haven't thought about those in years. Ugh.
That was my third stop. Yep.
Yeah, well, nothing beats Chicago's food. Some
no.
of it, you know.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to let...
Are we doing a show next week?
Yeah. On Tuesday, we're going to have David Fernandez. He's an
okay.
actor, producer, director, and he'll be on Tuesday.
Okay.
Due to scheduling, and he'll be on Tuesday.
Okay.
So
now, is there
week,
going to be a show on Thanksgiving?
No.
Okay. I wanted to double-check on that. I know you didn't do one last year.
No, and I'm working,
that's why I wanted
I'm working
to
on it for next Wednesday.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Just remember
that's
I said
fine.
Special.
Yes. Everything
mm-hmm.
is special. We know
there
that.
You go. I'm gonna let Charlie Baker take us out. You can get a hold of him at bakersongs.com, but this one's called Red.
Have a
and
great night.
All right, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Shimmer.